I offer my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, and welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triune Pilgrimage. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and I'm here to join you, as always, on this journey of going through the Bhagavad Gita, the song divine, as it is often translated into. We are in the third chapter. The chapter itself is often named as the chapter on Karma Yoga, and that's precisely what we're going through. And we did cover a couple of verses the last week around, and generally I start with a summary of what we have covered last time, and then we slowly proceed towards the other verses. But today I just want to take a break, and I want to speak in general and speak specifically about one of the verses that we covered last week. And it's not merely a summary of what we covered last week in that shloka, but it's a little more in detail because it calls for that. The verse that I want to go a little more in detail is going to be verse number 30. Last week we covered verses 29, 30 and 31. 29, of course, is a conclusion of a topic which was spoken of before, where there's a mention of gunas and prakriti and how that inspires one to act, and how a jnani never mistakes the body, which is prakriti, to be himself. And we spoke about all of that. And verse number 30, of course, I mentioned to you, even when we were going through at that time, that it is more or less a summary of what Karma Yoga is all about. And there are some very, very clear instructions that Swami gives in that shloka, which most certainly requires reiteration, repetition, and more importantly, calm self-reflection. So I thought we should spend a little more time on that, a little more time on the concept of Karma Yoga itself. Yes, as we go through the verses, we're going to keep repeating these things again and again. But I think it would be useful. I feel it will be useful for me if I can stop now and try to gather all that we have learned about Karma Yoga. And so I thought it would be useful for all you listeners too. So we're going to go through that verse number 30 again, go through it in a little more detail, and try to understand what this idea of Karma Yoga is. And probably at the end of it, I'm going to summarize and give in few points, what is this Karma Yoga? And more importantly, more than listening to it again and again, more than learning the shloka by heart, more than discussing about it, most important thing is practicing what this particular shloka says. In other words, practicing Karma Yoga itself. So at the end of it, I'll try to put it in few points as to how we can really practice this Karma Yoga in our everyday life. You don't have to be in an ashram. You don't have to be in a spiritual organization. You don't have to be doing this in the Satya Sai organization as an office bearer or as a Sai youth or as a Sivadal. This is for all kinds of karma, and I think that is the point that I'll be reiterating. But we'll go into all of that. Probably what we will do is we will listen to the shloka number 30 again. I'm going to play that again. We went through it last time and gave you the word by word meaning too. But we'll listen to the verse 30 again, and we will talk a little more in detail about it. And in general, we'll talk about the concept of Karma Yoga itself.
Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasyadhyatma chetasa nirashir nirmamo bhutva yudhyasva vigata jvaraha.
So that was the verse that I mentioned, that is verse number 30. And as I said, it is not like you can listen to the shloka once or you can have an entire hour of discussion with it. The most important thing is to start living it. And at the same time, just because it is not easy to start living it or not easy to practice it, it doesn't mean that we don't have it in us to achieve whatever Krishna is saying here. In fact, it is very, very reachable. It is very simple. In many ways, we will be already following this in some aspects of our life. It has to be done more consciously. It has to be done with a little more and little more intent and diligence is what I would say. Because Karma Yoga itself is a very slow process by which the attitude with which we perform our actions, we perform our duties, is meant to gradually change. Take the example of us playing a particular sport. Let's say that I start playing cricket or tennis when I'm a kid. When we are children, when we start playing any games, be it, in India, we famously call it gully cricket, where you just play cricket on the road or play cricket in your compound, or you play a game of shuttle in your own backyard. These are all very leisurely ways of taking up that sport, right? The same game, let's say I'm in school and my parents want me to take it up a little more seriously and they put me for some coaching classes, right? The same game, the game doesn't change, the rules of the game don't change, but my approach to this game has to now slowly start changing. So if I start going for coaching, I'm expected to take a little more disciplined approach to that game. And if you look at it, to a small extent, the fun and entertainment part will be removed, because now they'll say that you have to warm yourself up. So half an hour, they'll make you jog around the place and probably they'll, make you play strokes without any ball coming to you. I'm sure all of you have been in some kind of a rigor of learning any particular sport in school will be able to relate to this, be it cricket or tennis. You have to play a stroke all by yourself and then probably somebody will throw a ball at you and you have to play the stroke. The fun of a game is in competition, right? But that itself will be taken out, because now you're in a phase where you're taking the game a little more seriously and in a more disciplined manner. And this boredom aspect of the game has to be endured if you want to learn that. And, when you go for a coaching, probably once in a week or once in 2 weeks, you would have a competitive match. And we would literally be waiting for that. Now imagine the same game, be it cricket or whatever is the game that is of interest to you. You choose to take it up and you want to become a pro. You want to become a professional player. You want to play the competitive sport, that particular sport in the competitive sense, in the highest level. You want to play professional cricket or professional tennis. Now your approach to this same game, same rules, completely changes. The way you exercise, the way you work out in the gym completely changes. The kind of food that you eat completely changes. There are some psychological exercises that have to be done if you have to play this game in the highest level. So a lot of things in your schedule and in your life changes to cater towards this choice that you've taken. It's the same sport when played for leisure, when played a little more seriously, and when taken as a full-time profession, has to be approached differently, isn't it? Same is the case with karma too. The same actions that we perform as duty towards, say, our family or towards the upkeep of this body, or in our professional capacity. Now, the same karma, if we have to perform them with the eye on the ultimate, the ultimate goal, moksha as the reward, then they have to be performed in a certain manner. The way we judge our progress and success will also have to be done in a completely different manner than it was being done when karma was done only for karma's sake. So the way we see success and failure, the way we see right and wrong, the way we see achievement and progress, all of this will undergo an overhaul. There's one very, very beautiful statement in the Rig Veda, which kind of encapsulates what Karma Yoga is all about, and what Krishna had explained so far in the third chapter is also contained in this particular statement of the Rig Veda. The statement is, Atmano Mokshartham Jagat Hitayacha. Atmano Mokshartham Jagat Hitayacha. It is a definition of how karma must be performed by a spiritual aspirant. It means Atmano Mokshartham means for the purpose of self-redemption, for the purpose of freeing the self or realizing the self, however you would like to define that state. So Atmano Mokshartham, karma should be performed for the sake of self-redemption. Jagat Hitayacha. And for the welfare of the world. Isn't that what Krishna has been saying all this while? When he described the Jnani, he said the Jnani is only interested in the welfare of the world because he has no needs of his own. And then Krishna said that this nature of a Jnani can be emulated. Can you take up all your actions only for the purpose of the welfare of the world? And of course, the idea of doing whatever action or karma that you do for attaining the ultimate is something that Krishna has been telling right from the second chapter. So this literally summarizes what the approach of Karma Yoga is meant to be. So rather than doing karma as a regular duty, as a regular action, if I want to start doing Karma Yoga, firstly, the karma does not have to necessarily change. The duty that we are performing does not have to necessarily change. But the attitude has to change to Atmano Mokshartam Jagathitaya Cha. I perform my actions, I participate in these karmas, I do my duty so that I can attain self-realization and those around me can benefit. One of the points that Swami makes in the Gita discourses that Swami had given in the year 1984 is certainly worth recalling at this point. Swami says that when you approach karma as a means to moksha, we have spoken about this in detail, it's not like there is any action that I can perform that can give me self-realization. There is no action, there is no inaction that can give me that. But this process of doing one's duty is a means by which one attains chitta shuddhi, the mind is purified, and the mind is made prepared or is placed in a conducive state to receive this jnana, is what we are told. So when you start approaching karma as something that is a tool which is going to give you moksha, as something that prepares you for receiving the highest, Swami says, shouldn't you approach karma with respect and reverence? Swami says that it is recognizing this, that karma must be worshipped before it is taken up. There is a statement which is very, very popular. It's a very important statement in Indian culture. Swami says, Tasmai namak karmane. This is something that Swami says that it is supposed to be recited literally as a prayer. Tasmai namak karmane. It literally means, I salute my karma. I salute my duties. I salute the actions that I'm going to perform. Because this is going to give me the opportunity to progress. So how must we go about doing our actions in everyday life? That statement of Swami itself tells us how we must approach karma. With enthusiasm, with reverence, and with gratitude. So that is the approach a karma yogi has towards the duties that he has in life, be it to himself, be it to his body, be it to his family, be it to the society. He approaches it with enthusiasm because that is the means for his freedom. That is a tool that is helping him achieve the highest. So that reverence is there, that enthusiasm is there, and there will always be a sense of gratitude that I have this opportunity to do this and free myself. Now we go back to the verse number 30, because as I said, we'll be using the verse number 30 to understand this idea of Karma Yoga that Krishna has spoken about in so much detail. Now in the verse number 30, we will see that there are a few points that Krishna makes, and these are very, very important to understand how we can practice this Karma Yoga that we are talking about. And as I said, more important than knowing what they are, it is about practicing it, and it is about understanding that it is not outwardly, it is not beyond our reach, it is definitely within our reach, and I think that is the most important thing. And probably towards the end we will talk about how the reason the message is so deceptively simple is one of the reasons we probably don't take it too seriously, right? So this is what is said in the 30th verse of the which comes in the third chapter. Swami says in that particular verse, Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya adhyatma chetasa. I'm not going to split this Sanskrit statement into 2-3 parts, and I'm not sure that I'll be able to do that rightly because this is one statement, but there are multiple points in this which actually gives us an understanding of how we must go about this. Firstly, Swami says, do all actions as an offering to God. I had mentioned a few points before, and I think I'll reiterate that again. The first point is, what I offer to Swami should be acceptable to Swami. Meaning, it has to be based on goodness and morality. God and goodness can never be separated. I think this is a bottom line that we'll do good for ourselves if we separate it. So when I say I am doing it for God, I'm doing it as an offering to God, we cannot do it wrong, we cannot do it morally incorrect and say that this is my offering to Swami. At least that striving should be there to tend towards moral perfection. Right? You cannot hurt another person and say I'm doing it for God. You cannot cheat in business and say I'm offering it to God. Well, you can say that, but it does not become karma yoga. As I think I had mentioned this even while we were going through the second chapter. When Krishna says karma yoga, the karma itself means that karma which is done with the right intention, without the intention of hurting anybody, without the intention of cheating anybody. Right? Well, of course, whenever we make this point, the question comes, then how come Arjuna killing his enemies is acceptable then? If you cannot hurt a person in the name of karma yoga, if you cannot harm a person in the name of karma yoga, then how can Arjuna be performing karma yoga when he is participating in the war? In fact, in this particular shloka, the 30th shloka itself, Krishna says, Yudhyasva. Having all of these points in mind, go and fight. So Krishna himself is saying fight. I probably will not go too much into detail of this because we've spoken about this quite in detail when we were covering the first chapter and the second chapter. Arjuna is a warrior. War is his duty. Just as a surgeon's duty is to take up a knife and perform the surgery if the need is there, Arjuna is in a situation where war has become an inevitable, who has done all the tests and probably has put the patient through medication, and he has come to the state to understand that this is the best thing for the patient, right? And he is qualified to do that particular activity of performing that surgery. And Arjuna is in a very, very similar state. Arjuna is a warrior and war is his dharma. For him to take up arms and participate in a war is an acceptable norm, right? That we should never forget. And just like how once a surgeon goes into, given the right to look at the merit of the case and decide, does the patient need an amputation? Does the patient require any organ to be removed? Or if he goes in for delivery of a child, sometimes there is a situation where the doctor has to choose between saving the mother and saving the child. Or if there is there are twins, the doctor has to choose between saving both or saving one. So the doctor is not outside his dharma to make those choices. So when we are talking about Arjuna, when we are talking that Arjuna is being asked to fight in a war in the name of karma yoga, we must understand that he has come to this place after giving peace the best chance it has. Right? We have spoken about that. The whole story of Mahabharata is that. It's not like the Pandavas have come to the war field just because at the first instance where their rights were refused. They've tried all the means, they've tried compromise, they've tried dialogue, nothing has worked, and the collective wisdom has come to the understanding that this is the only way to sort this out for the larger good, right? So in all of this put together, the thing is, Arjuna is right in doing this, and that's why Krishna is saying, right, after all these logic, the simplest and the most direct point is Krishna is saying it cannot be wrong, right? That's the bottom line. But I'm not going to go into all the details. I'm not going to repeat that again. I think we've established this. But nevertheless, I think this question keeps coming again and again. It's not wrong to reiterate this again and again. The difference between Arjuna harming someone during the war and what I said before, that you cannot do something which hurts another person or is unkind to other person and then call it karma yoga, is that the approach with which Arjuna is asked to take up this particular battle, right? And it also comes down to how can we practically practice it. Simply put, we must try to put a little more love into whatever we are doing. So when we talk about Arjuna being a warrior in the battlefield, The situation itself has come, as I said, after giving peace the best chance that can be given. They've tried to give more than they can to the Kauravas. They've been very, very charitable. And after all of that, the situation has come. So when we talk about practicing Karma Yoga in our life, it simply boils down to, can we put a little more love, patience and kindness into whatever we are doing? Let us say that I'm a singer and I sing a bhajan and I'm offering it to God. Because the bottom line of all of this is, do all your actions as an offering to God, right? That is the touchstone with which we can understand how actions have to be performed. So I'm a singer, I want to offer this bhajan at Swami. What is the most important thing that makes a bhajan as good as it is? Musically, we know that it is raga and tala. Those are the two things which are important. But Swami says the most important component of a bhajan is not raga and tala. They are important components, but the most important component is bhava, or the feeling. So when I want to offer this bhajan or my singing to Swami, on one hand, I must work on the technical aspects and ensure that technically, raga-wise and tala-wise, it's the best thing that I can offer to Swami. And on the other hand, I must also be working on the bhava aspect, isn't it? Because that's not perfect in other ways. When I say I'm going to make this as an offering to God, it has to be perfect. But perfection does not remain only in the technicality. Perfection also comes into the bhava, because that is what Swami is looking for, if I could put it that way. Right? So I must also try to put in as much bhava as possible, as much feeling and emotion as possible, and that love should become more and more spontaneous. I'm probably not the best person to speak about it. You just heard the bhajan tutor, and I think week after week they speak about the importance of bhava behind the bhajan. And because that is what it is. At the end of the day, I probably cannot sing a bhajan as good as the best singers in the mandir or the best singers around in the studio. But when I want to make my singing as an offering to Swami, I can ensure, or I can try, that as technically sound as I can be, but I can always strive to make the bhava aspect more and more acceptable to Swami. Now that is for a bhajan, where clearly the person I am interacting with is Swami. There's only one and one. I am the one who is offering, he's the one who is receiving. Now when I talk of any other activity that you and I could be involved in, say I am a teacher, say I am a boss, say I am a team lead, I am taking care of elders in the family. When I say that I am doing this particular action, this particular karma as an offering to God, even there, I think the same idea of perfection applies. Apart from perfection in action, apart from doing whatever task has been assigned to me as perfectly as I can, I must bring in the aspect of love as much as I can, and that also becomes very, very important. And let us be honest and let us be practical. We all struggle in these situations, right? At least I can speak for myself. I struggle, I lose my patience. Sometimes I end up being very, very curt and rude. I think we all end up doing this. This doesn't mean that we do not have what it takes to do Karma Yoga. We just have to try and be a little more loving than I would have otherwise been when I'm this strict or this loving. But when I say that I want to do the same act for Swami as an offering to Swami, can we bring in a little more patience, a little more kindness, a little more love in that particular activity that we are doing? And that is what it takes. You know, I'm sure most of you devotees or even some of the students will notice this. In Swami's ashram, in Swami's institutions, and in Swami's organization, Swami's students are always given a little more better treatment or a little more respect and love compared to the others, right? The reason being, Swami showered a lot of love on his students. He gave them a lot of prominence. There, so much so that other devotees who have observed that, or be it Sevadal or the other staff in the ashram, they tend to treat students also slightly differently from the way they treat others. I'm not saying that it is right. I'm not saying that it is justified. I'm saying that it's an observation. It happens, right? And as a student, I've come across this situation so many times, right? We would probably go to a counter or we will go to the hospital and there'll probably be a person who's, you know, to give them the benefit of doubt, they're standing there whole day and they've been really tired out performing their duty. They do lose their temper once in a while, let's say. And let's say that I go there and they start behaving the same way, behave a little rudely, behave a little curtly. And all of a sudden somebody tells me, you know, this is a Swami student. And you can see that that person's nature completely changes. Immediately they apologize, immediately they calm down, and immediately they start, speak a little lovingly. This is an experience I think as students all of us would have had. The moment you say that so-and-so is Swami's student or any kind of association with Swami, if you bring in, the person softens and person becomes a little more kind. We can brush this whole thing that happens aside as saying that this is partiality or this is favoritism, etc., etc. But I think more than that, it's very, very important to see why this happens and can we inculcate this in our everyday life. That elder or that sevadal or that senior staff or whoever it is, he's actually not giving respect to students. He is giving respect to the attention that Swami gave the students. Or in other words, here is an interaction that he is having with people, be it the devotees who are coming to his counter or the devotees who are coming to the hospital, whatever the human interaction that he is having, he has a certain level of patience, a certain level of calmness or whatever it is. But the moment the person in front of him comes in front of him with a Swami association, this is a Swami student, you know, this is a so-and-so related to Swami, we become a little better than what we were during our other interactions. Now imagine we are talking about Swami's ashram. Here every work is Swami's work. Whatever you do, be it you're sitting in the coupon counter, or you're sitting in the, you're a doctor in the hospital, or you're a driver in the ashram, whatever it is, all work is Swami's work. And even when a person is doing something as Swami's work, when the person coming in front of him comes with a little bit of that, little more extra association with Swami, I'm not able to find a better way of putting this, we automatically become a little better than we would have otherwise been, right? I think that is the nature we have to capture and try to recreate in our own life. If I was a doctor elsewhere, or let's say if I'm a banker who's sitting at the counter, let's say that this is the level of patience I have, that I can be only this much loving, I can be only this much kind. If that is what is my level of being sweet and being calm and kind, when I say that I'm doing the same work for Swami, I'm bringing the Swami association into it, can I become a little more kinder, little more patient and little more calm compared to me doing this otherwise? Right? I think that is the question that we have to bring in. And just like how we all do this, the moment we have that Swami association in some form, we soften a little more, right? That's because of the love that we have for Swami. That's because of the reverence and respect that we have for Swami's words and Swami's choices, right? The same thing has to be brought in. And that's why Krishna says, do whatever you do as an offering to me. Because the moment you can do it as an offering to me, it will automatically bring in a little more love, a little more kindness, a little more selflessness, and all of that will automatically come, right? So every day can we learn to be a little more loving, patient and kind compared to what we were yesterday? Because I'm doing it for Swami, not because of anything else, because whatever I'm doing is an offering to Swami. And I think this each one of us is definitely capable of. We cannot be perfect. It's going to take a long time before that happens. At least I can talk for myself. But we can consciously become a little more better than what we were yesterday, right? There are two statements that Swami often speaks about. One statement is what we have come across already in the Bhagavad Gita that we have covered so far. These two statements are Yogaha Karma Sukaushalam, and the second being Sarva Karma Bhagavat Prityartham. Yogaha Karma Sukaushalam, a statement that we came across, I think, in the second chapter itself. It means perfection in action is itself yoga. But if you look at it, even a person who is doing regular karma for the karma's sake, he's not thinking about moksha, he's not thinking about offering to God, even such a person will also be striving for perfection, isn't it? Let's say I'm a singer, I will definitely want to be improving in my trade. If I'm a sportsman, I want to be a better sportsman with every passing year, right? And that is what each one strives to be, better at whatever they are doing, right? So when you say excellence, when you say perfection, everyone is, unless and until you're a very lethargic and lazy person, everyone who wants to get better, who wants to excel, who wants to grow, who wants to progress, will be after perfection nevertheless, right? Then how is karma yoga different from a person doing action like this? When I become a karma yogi, my actions become bhagavat prityartham. For the sake of pleasing God, that's what that statement means. Sarva karma bhagavat prityartham means performing all actions with the single motive of pleasing God. So even when I am offering my actions to Swami, I must strive for excellence, because yoga karma sukaushalam, excellence in action itself is going to take you towards the ultimate stage. But the added thing here is, the excellence that I strive for is not limited to external activity alone. It is not limited to me becoming a better singer, me becoming a better sportsman, me becoming a better at whatever profession I do, or becoming a better mother, becoming a better father. That alone is not enough. It should also include these qualities which are dear to Swami. Because Priti Artham means what He likes should be the guiding principle that decides what I offer to Him. Right? So when I say I am doing my work as an offering to Swami, apart from seeing my progress in the excellence in the work, I will also see my progress in self-transformation. Am I becoming a better person? Am I becoming more calm and patient? So these are the ways by which I will start judging myself, apart from am I becoming better at my profession, right? Yoga karma sukaushalam suggests that you become better at whatever you're doing, you become more and more perfect. But when you say sarva karma bhagavat prityartham, Swami is not going to be happy if I'm the best scientist in the world. Swami is not going to be happy if I'm the best cricketer in the world. Swami will be happy if I'm a better person today than I was yesterday. So the moment I say whatever I do, I want to make this an offering to Swami, the self-transformation aspect becomes a very, very important component of what I offer to Swami, right? If you look at it, if I want to earn a few million rupees or dollars or whatever it is, we are ready to struggle day and night. We are ready to put in a lot of effort. These are qualities which are much, much more valuable, isn't it? Swami says these are the qualities that you can carry from birth to birth. Your possessions, your money, your property are all things that are going to be confiscated at the time of death. There is no way you can carry it across. But these qualities are qualities that you can carry across. In fact, the next few verses which are going to come, Krishna is again going to speak about prakriti and guna and all of that. Because these are the qualities which get embedded in the subtle body and are taken from birth to birth. So when we are ready to strive so much for something that we cannot carry with us from one birth to the other, it is understandable that these are qualities are worth striving for, isn't it? So we must be more patient with ourselves more than anything else, right? And that will come with the recognition that these qualities are precious and they are preparing me for the ultimate wisdom, right? Just like Swami said, Tasmai nama karmane, we will also look at trying situations, especially somebody who tests our patience and somebody whom we are finding it very difficult to be kind to and loving to. These are all people who give us the opportunity to practice that patience. There is this very beautiful dialogue in a movie, I think we must have mentioned this as part of our afternoon satsang too, where the story goes that God comes in the form of a human being and he's trying to teach some things to some individuals, and there's this dialogue which comes there where he comes and tells this lady that just think about this. When you pray to God for patience, Does God give you patience or does God give you opportunities to become more patient? When you ask God for love, does He give you a loving nature or does He give you situations where you can learn to love more? Right? It's a very, very beautiful dialogue in that movie, and it's a very beautiful concept. So when you treasure these qualities, when you treasure patience, when you treasure tolerance, when you consider these qualities as what will please Swami when they are part of my offering to Him, then you will start looking at these situations which enable you to practice those qualities, enable you to learn to have those qualities as precious opportunities which are being presented in front of you. That these are scenarios and situations that are enabling me to move towards my goal. So the first point, when we do whatever we do as an offering to God, we will look at progress and perfection in a very, very different light. We will have a completely different perspective of what is perfection and what is progress. Am I becoming more loving in my approach? Am I becoming more patient? Am I becoming more calm? These are the things that we will look as progress rather than am I becoming more famous? Am I making more money? So on and so forth. There's another important metric that Krishna mentions, and it is in this shloka itself. He says, sanyasya, act with renunciation, he says. So the other metric is, am I becoming more detached in this process of progress? And this detachment is not like a dull, defeatist approach. And it is, as we have said, it gives birth to enthusiasm, and it does not give birth to virakti or dispassion in that sense. We'll try to understand this. Let me try to explain that a little more further. Now, let's say I'm working as an IT professional or I'm a banker. I bring in all these qualities that I just mentioned. Perfection in whatever I do. I do whatever I do very, very, very sincerely. In all my interaction with my colleagues and my teammates and the customers, I'm bringing in a lot of patience and a lot of love. And at the end of the year, they come and they give the award for the best employee or they give the promotion and it goes to one of my colleagues. I am not recognized for all the good work that I've done, with all the patience and love that I've poured into my work. But here is this colleague of mine who suddenly gets lucky. Probably he's more close to the boss or whatever it is. Or for whatever reason, they've chosen to recognize his contribution over yours. Wouldn't I feel hurt and let down when this happens? I'm sure we have all gone through this in some way or the other, where we have put our heart and soul into it and it just goes unrecognized. And our efforts go absolutely unnoticed and unrewarded. And people don't value our work as much as we thought that they will value, because the moment you become a karma yogi, you're putting your best. That's the best work that you can offer, right? And when it goes unrecognized, you feel so let down and you feel so used up and, you know, dissipated in that sense. You feel so tired. I think most of us have gone through this. When we have put our heart and soul into something as an offering to Swami and it just, you know, does not get the recognition that is due. I think that feeling that comes is very, very natural because we have put 100% into whatever we are doing. At such times, can we pause and ask ourselves, what did I do all this for? If I did it for the sake of pleasing Swami, why am I expecting others to reward me for this? Why am I expecting that others should come and appreciate me for this? This thought will not come spontaneously to all of us. I think for some of us, probably we are in that level where it comes spontaneously. But for most of us, the first reaction will be disappointment and despondency. And every time we feel let down like this, unappreciated or underappreciated or whatever it is, or when someone else gets the credit for all the work that we have done, can we stop and ask ourselves this? Did I really do what I did to be appreciated, or did I do it as an offering to Swami? And if I have done it as an offering to Swami, it should not bother me that others do not recognize this work. It is not to say that rewards and recognition will not come. whenever there's good work, it will come, whether you want the reward or not, whether you want to be noticed or not, it will happen, because at the end of the day, good work is always noticed. But when I do it for Swami, when I do it with the attitude that I'm doing it as an offering to my Swami or to my love, I should not be bothered whether it comes or not. And this can come only when I every now and then stop myself, especially when I'm in a situation where I'm low that this is not happening this way, I'm able to stop myself and review my thinking. This happens so much so that as a Karma Yogi, I should in fact become glad when this happens, because it's an opportunity for me to practice detachment. Just like how I said, when a difficult customer comes in front of you or a difficult person that you have to work with comes in front of you, you see it as an opportunity to develop qualities which are dear to Swami. When you have done your best and when you don't get recognized, in a way it should give you a certain thrill that here is an opportunity for me to practice this quality of detachment. Here is an opportunity for me to practice this idea of surrender, right? And that is why Swami says you should always look forward to adversities with a sense of enthusiasm, because otherwise you cannot grow. Just like how Swami would say a student must look at an exam as an opportunity to progress, not as a situation or thing to be feared or something which is going to put him down, right? You've studied one full year in a class. You must look at an exam as an opportunity to go to the next class, as an opportunity to go higher. Similarly, Swami says, when such adversities come, when you've done your best and you don't get rewarded, when you've given the best and somebody else gets the credit for it, all of these are opportunities that are given to you where you stop and say that, you should say, Swami, thank you for this opportunity, because now I can review the attitude with which I have done. This is an opportunity for me to practice detachment, right? Remember, it all started with Arjuna asking, if jnana is all important, why can't I give up all this and pursue jnana, right? That's the question with which the third chapter literally starts. And Krishna's reply was, yes, jnana is the highest, but there are two nishtas or two pathways, Sankhya and Karma Yoga. Renunciation of all karma or duty, which is called Sankhya, or this is renunciation that we spoke about. A sannyasi with his focus on the spiritual goals gives up all his actions, whereas a Karma Yogi gives up all the mundane rewards, right? The difference is a sannyasi gives up the karma itself, but this Karma Yogi, from what we've seen here, he says that, you know, I'm not seeking these worldly rewards for my action. I am only seeking the highest as a reward for whatever action I'm doing, right? So that is Karma Sannyasa and this is Karma Phala Sannyasa. It is desire for Karma Phala that causes the problem. If you look at it, it is not karma itself which is the problem, but it is that the karma which leads to a consequence, me wanting that consequence, me wanting one particular consequence is all that causes the problem. So the moment there is karma phala tyaga, it is as good as karma tyaga itself, because you are giving up the attachment to karma. And Krishna said that this type of sannyasa, both are sannyasas, both are types of renunciation, be it karma sannyasa or karma phala sannyasa, both are a form of renunciation. But Krishna says that this type of sannyasa is more suitable for you, Arjuna. And in the truest sense, there is no difference between the two. And the reason why the Bhagavad Gita is so important, Swami gives it so much importance, is what Krishna is telling here, that this form of sannyasa is more applicable to most of us. And that is why it is so important, right? So for a sannyasi and a karma yogi, the focus should be on the spiritual. And that's why Krishna says, in this 30th verse, he says, Adhyatma Chetasa. The mind must be fixed on the spiritual. If it is not fixed, like in the case of most of us, because we all get, as we go through life, something attracts us and something distracts us and something, you know, somebody doesn't appreciate us, we become low. Somebody else gets appreciated, somebody else does well in life. All of these things are distractions, right? These all mean that we are not actually focused on the spiritual all the time. So if we are not fixed, like in the case of most of us, how often can we return to that? We must find time to remind ourselves as often as possible that my focus should be on the spiritual. Let's say you're a housewife. How often can you remind yourself that whatever you're doing is for spiritual progress and not for X, Y, or Z? Not for your son, or not for your daughter, or not for your husband, or not for the elders in your family. Whatever you're doing is for the purpose of spiritual progress. How often can we remind ourselves of this? If you ask me, all sadhana that we do, be it singing bhajans, meditation, silent sitting, and all of that, is only so that we can every now and then take time to recapitulate this and remind ourselves that whatever I am doing is for spiritual progress. That is why Swami gives so much importance for daily and weekly prayer sessions. It is not that Swami wants to be praised or Swami wants to be glorified through bhajans. That is never the case. These are all moments where the mind is turned inward, turned towards the spiritual, and what Krishna said of adhyatma chetasa. Every now and then it is not possible to do it as we go through. Yes, that is the ultimate and the practice is going to lead to that. But in the absence of that, at least every now and then, every day, in the morning, at the end of the day, or once a week, or when you take out a pilgrimage, or all of these are opportunities where you refocus your mind on the spiritual, right? And imagine all of this becomes so very easy when you have love for God. That is the bottom line of whatever Krishna says, because he started that shloka by saying, do whatever you're doing as an offering to me. And you will not be able to do that unless you have love for God, right? And when I feel that I am doing all this for Swami, it actually goes to a different level of karma yoga itself. Even within karma yoga, when done with this attitude, it goes to the highest level of karma yoga, if I could put it that way. Because whatever I've explained as karma yoga, it can be practiced even without this attitude of offering to God. Technically speaking, you don't have to have this attitude of offering to God. But when love comes into the picture, when I say Bhagavat Prithyartham, I do not even expect anything from Swami. I am doing it purely for the pleasure of Swami. And as I said, this is something that we all have done to a great extent. As mothers, as fathers, as friends, we all have done acts of love very, very spontaneously. Sometimes the recipient does not even know that we have done this for them, and we won't even care telling it to that person. Because when you do something out of pure love, you're actually not seeking any reward at all. You've done it. You've done it out of love, and it is done and gone, right? How many of us have done acts like that? I'm sure especially mothers and fathers and teachers would have all done these kind of things where they would have just done out of love and they would have never cared that it was not reciprocated or it was not noticed or it was not the favors were not returned. Because when you do anything out of love, you do not have any expectations whatsoever, right? So there are so many things that we will do silently even without that person knowing. And can we bring this attitude into karma yoga when you say that whatever I'm doing it as an offering to Swami? And that is why Krishna says in this verse, he says, Nirashir Nirmamo Bhutva. There is no expectation when there is love. Nirashi, there is no expectation. And Nirmamo, you're not thinking about yourself. When there is purest form of love. So when Krishna says that whatever action that you're doing, you do it out of love for me, it means, yes, you're thinking about Krishna, you probably are not even thinking about moksha as a goal. That is why I said, even within karma yoga, if it is a higher level, I think this is what it is. We all have expectations, even when it comes to Swami, right? But that is because, in many ways, our love is imperfect. So if I become a better devotee, if I become a better lover of God, if I could put it that way, it goes without saying that I will become a better karma yogi too. We will discuss this relationship between bhakti and karma yoga much later. I think the 12th chapter and other chapters in between, Krishna is going to speak about the value of bhakti, and I'm sure we'll revisit this at that time and we'll speak in detail about it. But this simple act of doing out of love for Swami takes this whole process of performing karma to the next level. And the last word that Krishna uses in the shloka is the perfect barometer to see if we are doing all of this right. He says, Vigata Jwaraha. can we be without a troubled mind? It's a very, very interesting word. The word jvara means a lot of things. It means weakness, it means lethargy, it means disturbance of the mind. In fact, we use the word jvara in a lot of our local languages to refer to feverishness, right? Jvara is also feverishness. So all of those qualities and physical traits that go with the idea of jvara, you're not able to think straight, you're restless, you're tired, you're lethargic. So Krishna says, vigata jvaraha, means can you be away from all of these mental aberrations? Simply put, can your mind be kept calm, cheerful and content? So the best way to judge whether we are becoming better at this, our offering to Swami is, am I becoming more calm? Am I becoming more cheerful? Cheerful without a reason, not because I'm getting rewards, not because I'm getting recognized. Cheerful without reason, and similarly content. Content because, as I said, when love is perfect, just the act of doing itself is enough to give you contentment. And you stop your joy seeking with the action itself. You're not looking at the consequence of that action or that action to be rewarded. So these are the many, many things that Krishna says in that one particular shloka. And of course, it's not that one particular shloka. It's till now whatever Krishna has been telling. In fact, whatever we've been mentioned is going to come later too. So as I promised, let me summarize whatever I've said in the form of few points. I want to start practicing Karma Yoga. What am I supposed to do? So these are the points. I'll mention them one after the other. First point, you don't have to change the karma that you do. But the way you do karma must change. So if you're a doctor, you can remain a doctor. If you're a student, you can remain a student. If you're a housewife, you can remain a housewife. You don't have to change the karma that you do if you want to become a Karma Yogi. That's point number one. Second, respect karma. Respect the duty which is there in front of you because it's a means to achieve the highest. So look at whatever duty that is assigned to you with reverence. That's the second point. Can we develop this attitude? That's a very, very important quality for a Karma Yogi. The third point, consider all actions as offerings to Swami. Right? This is the point that we mentioned as the first statement that Krishna makes in the 30th verse. Consider all actions as an offering to Swami. Forget all the other things that comes along with this. Can we think of this every day? Swami would say that you start off by saying, as I mentioned, 1984 discourse, Tasmai Nama Karmane. Before you start your actions, you say, I'm offering my respects to these karmas which are going to take me closer to Swami. At the end of the day, Swami would say, can you offer all your actions to Swami and say, Swami, whatever I've done, good and bad, right and wrong, patience, impatience, loving, kind or rude or whatever it is, Swami, I offer it all to you. Let me start tomorrow being a better person, right? So even that act of thinking that way, what are the other qualities which follow it? Yes, we'll talk about that, but just thinking that way that I am, whatever I'm doing, I'm offering to God is a very, very important first step in Karma Yoga. So when I say that I'm offering to God, what are the things that it leads to? Do it as perfectly and sincerely as you can. There is no comparison here. There is no, am I more sincere than that person? Am I doing it more perfectly than that person? That's the best way to lose your peace of mind. We all know that, right? We all do that all the time. Do it as perfectly and as sincerely as you can. Every day, become more perfect and more sincere, right? That's the bottom line. So that is the next point of Karma Yoga. The next point is, do it with a little more love, a little more patience and kindness than you would have done it otherwise. That's the next point. And both of this, perfection in action and perfection with the attitude with which you do it, can you keep trying to improve in that? The next point is, if at all the mind ever seeks any reward, recognition or appreciation from the people around you, don't get too upset with yourself. Don't start flogging yourself. Remind yourself that you did it for Swami and not for such things. Every time that attitude comes, remember to remind yourself that no, I did it for Swami, I did not do it for this reward. You've showered so much love on a person, that person does not respond to you, you will feel hurt. It's not unnatural to feel that way. Can we stop ourselves and say, no, I did it as an offering to Swami, I should not be seeking this reward in return. Right? So just that reminder. The next thing is, in this way, can we spend some time in self-reflection and recalibration whenever we can, be it the bhajan session or be it silent sitting or whatever it takes, or if you want to take a walk in solitude by yourself, or if you want to listen to music and think, whenever you can, find time to recalibrate, reflect on all of these things. Why am I doing what am I doing? Why am I expecting these things? What is going on in my mind? That is a very, very important aspect of Karma Yoga. If applause and reward comes, as I said, it will come. Good work will be recognized eventually. Whenever it comes, accept them as Swami's prasadam. Accept them with humility. Don't run away from them. You don't have to run away if that happens. Accept them purely as Swami's prasadam and have that attitude of humility. If adverse results come, which is also something which will always happen, you'd have done your best. The results do not really reflect your perfection and your dedication. Even that, accept as Swami's prasadam. Because, as Krishna said in the beginning of the third chapter, or I think in the second chapter, there is no wastage in Karma Yoga. The moment you say, I'm doing it as an offering to Swami, there can be no wastage in that. Na iha abhikramanasha asti. That is what Krishna said. There is no wastage in this path. Even if adverse results come, even if you get brickbats instead of roses for what you have done, all of this is worthwhile, because if it is done as Karma Yoga, you are marching closer towards your goal. Finally, how to measure our progress? Are we more content? Are we deriving more joy from the work rather than the results? Are we more enthusiastic in the work that we are supposed to do? Are we becoming calmer in what we are doing? Right? And another way of putting all of this is, can we care less about who gets credit for the work that we do? Right? Because this is something that all of us suffer, especially in the professional work. When we work in a team, there's always somebody else who takes the credit for what we're doing. If you're working, your boss takes the credit, your colleague takes the credit, your senior takes the credit. Can we develop that attitude, or are we growing in that attitude that I don't care who gets the credit? I have done my work. I have drawn my joy from the work. Right? And when a tough situation comes, you will welcome it with enthusiasm as an opportunity to practice surrender, right? So these are the points that I wanted to make as a summary to what Krishna is talking about Karma Yoga. Certainly this is not a comprehensive summary, neither is it an impossible thing to do. As I said, it is not away from us. It requires conscious practice, right? And this can be done in whatever you're doing, whether you're working at home, whether you're a student, whether you're retired and you're at home, whatever it is, all of this can be practiced. I mean, Karma Yoga can be practiced, whatever is the action one is doing. So we've gone through the verse 31-2 last week. Apart from 29-30, we also went through verse number 31. In fact, I wanted to go to verse number 32. 31 and 32, in a way, are shlokas which come together. In 31, Krishna says that what we went through last week, Krishna says, if you follow this, this is what you will get. Right? So in that verse, Krishna mentions that what is the reward if you follow it? And you can follow it only when you have that kind of faith. Because as I said, it is like, it's a system where there is no seen reward. If I'm working hard for a promotion, if I'm working hard to earn some money, the reward is tangible. It is in front of you. You can count it. You can see it. But when you're talking about progress in the spiritual path, it's an unseen thing. Yes, of course, there are ways by which you can sense progress. As I said, contentment and happiness and enthusiasm and all of that. It is there. But to start on that journey, you need to have faith. To give it a try, you need to have faith. And that's what Krishna said in the 31st verse. Whoever takes up to this path, whoever takes up what I'm telling to be true and has faith in it and practices it every day, such a person will be released from the cycle of karma and consequence. That was verse number 31. And verse number 32, Krishna is going to counter that, or going to say that it's almost like if not. And this is a coupled argument which is going to come again and again in the Gita. We have already come across that, where Krishna is saying that if you do this, this is the benefit you'll get. But if you don't do this, this is how it is going to adversely affect you. But I think I've run out of time. I didn't realize that summaries of the discussion on Karma Yoga itself is going to take so much of our time. I hope whatever I said was useful. As I mentioned to you right in the beginning, I wanted this break so that I can digest this, whatever Krishna has said so far on the idea of Karma Yoga, because this is the most important message that he's giving. As we're going to see in the next verse, Krishna is saying that if you don't understand this, you're going to be confused all your life, right? That's how important this Karma Yoga is, and this is something that we all can follow. And we should be so grateful that we have Swami in our life, that this act of doing whatever I'm doing as an offering to God has become so very easy for us, because we have learned, I'm sure I can say this on behalf of everyone, we have learned to love Swami. Because of Swami's presence in our life, we have learned to love God. And purely because of that one point that we have started learning to love God, Karma Yoga is going to become so much more accessible to us. And we should be very, very grateful to Swami for that. And I join you all in offering my humble pranams and grateful pranams to Swami for that opportunity. I'll join you all again next week, 7:30. We'll continue the third chapter. As I said, we'll start with verse number 32 when I meet you the next time. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of today, the Vahini Satsang. But I'll join you all again next week at 7:30 p.m. for resuming the Triune Pilgrimage of the Gita series.